Welcome to Dunzo. This is a podcast that explores hookups and breakups of famous lovers and friends, both real and fake, and all the discarded pop culture of yesteryear. I'm your host, Troy McEady. Okay, you guys, welcome to whatever episode number this is of Dunzo. It is me, Troy McEady, and we are finally, after two summers, we're finally finishing up what we should have finished a long time ago. Zanique is back, and we are finishing this I Know What You Did Last Summer moment. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm back. I'm ready for the sequel.
This sequel is wild, bananas, insane, nuts, cockadoo, cockamimi. It like just fucking, it is insanity.
It is so crazy. I loved it.
It's so good. I love it so much. I realized that like when I was watching this, like it was like, wow, I used to watch the sequel almost when I was younger. I used to watch it almost more than like the original.
So for me, similar to the first one, I have seen this before, but could not remember the plot to it.
Which makes sense.
Which, I mean, I think it's just the brand of this movie, this franchise, but oh my God, no, it was so much fun. Like compared to last time, I took so many notes on that movie. This one, I started to, and I just like stopped at one point and just sat and just like watched in awe. Like, what is going on?
It's like action-packed, hot. I mean, it really, I like said this a million times when I was recording the Scream episode that I did with my friend Jay, but I think the whole point of a sequel, like I follow the rules of Randy. Like I think that a sequel is supposed to be bigger and it's supposed to have a bigger body count and
yep,
there should be more blood and it should be a bigger budget and they should expand on the story. And I mean, by all accounts, like this movie does all the stuff that I feel like a horror sequel should do.
Yes, it ticks all of the boxes and then some.
Do you remember the first time you saw this movie? Were you really young or were you like older?
So I was really young for this, and I don't remember much about what I saw. The one thing that stood out to me, and I'm not sure why, is the very ending, as the very end when we discover that Brandy is still alive and she's doing that like limp. And right, that part like sent me, because I'd forgotten all about it until I saw the scene again and just started cracking up because like she and Julie start limping towards each other. Yeah. It's like a really like fucked up like Heidi or something. Like so funny to me.
You hear Brandy's little voice being like, Julie, from like the woods.
Yes.
And she's like covered in like cuts and bruises and like palm leaves.
Yeah, I just love like a post slasher movie limp. I don't know what that is, but best. Something about just like, oh, like I don't know what my injury is, but like you saw me fall through a glass ceiling, so I'm not doing well.
It's so that it's almost like they don't know what the injuries are supposed to be, but it's like I'm like, is my leg broken? Is my ankle sprained? Is my hip popped out? Like what's wrong with me? I don't know, but yes, I'm showing you that I went through something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is for some reason, I don't know why, but I Know What You Did Last Summer made a real big impact on me as a kid. And I used to watch this one all the time because I was so obsessed with the fact that Brandy was in it. And
oh yes,
I just think it's really like, it's literally like action packed. Like from the moment the climax of the movie starts, I would say around, I wrote in my notes that for me, this movie gets very real around the time that he locks Julie in the, basically when Julie goes tanning.
Yes.
It's when shit starts to get very much real in this movie. And from that point on, it's like, it doesn't really calm down for the rest of the way.
It really doesn't. I think the pace is awesome after that moment. It's just like one, just like one kill after another. It actually was just like a wonderful way to up the ante. Because like we said with the first one, it reads more like a murder mystery. And it's like not very bloody, not very violent, kind of just, it's more about just like discovering, like more like a whodunit. And this one is just like, but also very obvious because from like the onset, I'm like, I know who the killer is. Like, it's very clear who the killer is.
Right. Like it couldn't be more clear who the killer is.
Yeah, but no, you're not here for that. Like, you're here to just see, like, people just getting murdered in the most creative ways. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and actually getting murdered. Mm-hmm. And, like, not, you know what I mean? Not, like, not having two people in the movie die.
Yes.
It should also be noted, I feel like it should be stated, it's important, Kevin Williamson didn't write this one. So the guy who wrote the first one and who wrote Scream had nothing to do with this one. And you can feel there's a change in tone, but I almost feel like it's like a welcomed change for me.
Okay. Yeah, no, I see that. I see that. I think, I mean, like we said, like, this one is definitely a lot, like, the schlock factor is definitely, like, ramped up.
Yeah.
And the one thing I notice, especially with the writing too, I think it's, okay, this is, like, my headcanon, but I feel like, you know, studio executive meddling, they decided, like, okay, this is the sequel. We have to take them someplace. It has to be, like, an island destination. This is going to be your setting, and you need to write around that. And it's very obvious that they're writing around the fact that they have to get to this point.
Right.
If you get what I'm saying? It's, like, totally the worst kind of writing of, like, I know what the destination has to be, so I'm just going to, like, do everything I need to do to get you there, but it's very obvious.
Like, they're like, doing. Why don't we say, I mean, we could say that they want a radio show.
Yes.
Like, okay. All right. That works. It's like, I guess.
Like, I wish I was in the writer's room for that, of, like, trying to put together the pieces of, like, how do we justify them winning this trip? But then there's no one there. And then, like, and that, there's, like, some voodoo in there. Like,
right. And then it's like, of course, like, you have to make, like, they can't have this horror movie take place on, like, a beautiful tropical island. It has to be raining, of course.
Yeah, we have to make, like, the Bahamas terrifying.
Exactly. So let's write in that it's winter in the Bahamas. It's our winter. I don't know. I the loopholes are insane, but, like, I'm almost more forgiving of the loopholes in this movie because it doesn't try so hard to be. That's the other thing. I don't think this movie tries as hard to be so serious. Like, the first one wanted to be very, very serious.
And this exactly.
one, I don't think, does.
Well, yeah, I think this one, they finally figured out, like, what people are looking for when they're seeing these movies. It's not, like, it, you don't, I mean, again, I love the horror genre. I don't want to, like, you know, talk down about it, but this particular type of movie, this type of slasher, it's like, come on, it's summertime. You're like, it's 1998. No, actually, this came out in November. Weird. Okay, it's November. You're like 15. You're out with your friends. Maybe it's your first rated R movie. This is the movie you want to see. You don't want to think. You just want to, like, eat popcorn, drink totally. Like a giant, like, Coca-Cola, and just, like, scream, and that's it. Like,
1,000%. They figured out the tone. Yeah.
They figured out the tone. They figured out the formula of, like, this is how you make a fun teen-oriented slasher movie, and it involves geography trivia, apparently.
Yeah, and I will say, as far as the setting, like, I've always thought that the setting was kind of just, like, random and kooky, that they were like, it's, I know what you did last summer, but Bahamas, baby.
Yeah.
but, like, watching it this time, I did, for the first time in my entire life, realize that it was actually kind of cool that they moved the setting across the world, but they still managed to make it, like, a foggy dock moment. Like,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean? They're still on murky, foggy docks somehow, which is cool to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we took Jason to space, so
yeah.
Julian the Bahamas is not that crazy. Like, why not?
If Jason can take a cruise across the ocean and land in Manhattan, like, things, we can do this. I also just want to start by saying that I think Jennifer Love Hewitt is a better actress than we ever allowed her to be back in the day. Like,
yeah,
she carries this movie really well to me. And I don't know, like, the plot is so unbelievable. And if it weren't her as the final girl, I think this movie would be, like, it has potential to be horrible. But I think she does a really good job of carrying this movie.
She does. And I think in part it's because she knows what this is. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know what the people want. Like, she sells it. Brandy does, like, an okay job of, like, I think she gave me a lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein's like Cinderella acting, but
oh yeah,
she's, you know, she did what she could. She's still very charismatic. So it, it worked for her.
Totally. You can see why she is. I mean, she, her, like her presence is so magnetic, just like no matter what,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's so charming and like funny and I don't know. I just like, I love her so much. I can't even put it into words. And she's so fucking pretty.
She is. Like, I guess I also, I realized I hadn't seen Brandy at this age in such a long time. Cause I also haven't seen Cinderella in forever. I guess I was watching Moesha the other day, but I think just this particular Brandy where I think it's like, this is after The Boy Is Mine. Like, it's like peak Brandy, I feel like. And I realized like, I really have not seen her in this stage of life in such a long time. And it's like, she's so like fresh face and like,
yeah,
great. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
She has it. Like, I get it.
She does. She's got moxie, baby. She's just got it. And I was realizing when I was watching her this time too, like, I was like, wow, Brandy created so many, like Brandy took braids and said, I'll do you one better. And I will introduce the girls to every kind of braid style that has ever existed in the history of twisting hair together. Like, I will show you girls every possible hairstyle.
Oh my God. And these micros were so small. I was like,
oh my God.
How long did she sit in the chair to get that done? How many people were doing her hair at once?
Do you remember that conversation as a kid? Like, I remember hearing my mom talk all the time about like how long it must have taken to do Brandy's hair.
Yeah. Cause like, it's like, as someone who braids her hair a lot, I've never gone that small, and watching her, I was like, Jesus, like that looks terrible. Like, she looks great, but oh my God, like that was a whole weekend. Like,
yes, tedious and painful.
Yes. Her poor scalp.
I also did want to say, before we get into anything deep, that Jennifer Love Hewitt, I actually meant to say this to you last week.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Love Hewitt plays into the trope of Jennifer Love huge tits. Like every, I mean, can we like really talk? Like, she is always in some sheer top.
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. My dog is.
No, you're completely fine. Dogs are like welcome on this podcast. I really
appreciate it. Awesome. No, someone's coming in to like do work in the apartment, so he's not happy about it.
It's like, hey mom, just so you know. But no, her like nipples are always iced, rock hard.
Yes.
Boobs are jiggling all over the place. They literally look I wrote in my notes that they look like digitally animated boobs.
Like a video game.
Like yeah, like, Croft. Yeah, like they had to figure out how to make them jiggle as much as physically possible with every movement.
Yes. I mean, but I don't, hey, you know what? Why not? I don't blame her. Like, she has great boobs. Also, another person, Brandy's butt. Like,
oh my God.
At one point when they're when she's doing the tanning scene and she's like working out, she walks past and I was like, Jesus Christ, Brandy, like what? But no, I don't blame her. Like, this is working for you. Like, lean into it.
1,000%. She has arguably some of the best boobs I think I've ever seen in Hollywood. Honestly, they're amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what that whole like, what are you waiting for scene is designed for. It's like, just totally. For her to like jump up and down and like turn around and just like,
well, cause she's
shimmy so the best she can.
Well, because she's so good at bouncing them and making it look like nobody moves their body like that, but like somehow she makes it okay where she's like, what are you waiting for, and she's like bouncing all over the place. Soaking wet, just dripping wet with nipples hard. Like, I live.
It was great.
And we get a lot of so I was thinking, well, this must have been when she really was like kicking up the music game, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
You really had decided like, I'm gonna try and go for this, and I'm gonna try and be a singer and an actor just like Brandy. Because her music is in the movie and she sings in the movie and she's on the soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean that's very clear. Like, see, that's another thing. It's like, there are certain notes they had to hit for the script that they write. So like, we have to get Jen, like, she needs to be singing in this somehow. How? Okay, let's have a karaoke scene. Like, we need to, like, do these very specific things that her people have talked to us about. Like, we're trying to, like, fucking raise the stakes with her career. But, yeah, like, it was just thinking about Jennifer Love Hewitt's, like, singing career still just is such a weird thing to think about because it's something I have not thought about for a very long time. It's like, oh, yeah, that happened. Weird.
I know. It's such, like, a... It's such like a weird thing because it's like some people just don't make it doing things that they're really good at. Like, she's a great singer and there's absolutely no reason that she didn't make it as a singer aside from the fact that she just like didn't.
Would you say, you know, hey, I'm gonna pose a theory. I would say it's way easier for a young starlet to start off as a singer and then transition to acting in the other way. Generally speaking,
I 1000% agree with that.
I think we are way more ready to let a young singer be an actress and not the other way. I don't know why that is, because it's like Mandy Moore like came up around the same time, but like Mandy Moore is like actually like a like successful actress today, and I would say more people would think of her as an actress before a singer like now. But
yeah, that's so true. I've never really thought about that, but it's very true.
It just popped into my head, and I don't have enough evidence to support this claim, but I think there's something there. I think we're willing to see a singer and be like, oh, okay, she's going to try acting. But like an actress singing is like, what are you trying to prove? Like, don't you have it all?
And it's almost like more jarring to hear. Like, even now it's like, I know Jennifer Love Hewitt can sing. I've listened to Bare Naked 38,000 times in my lifetime. But even now, like when I hear her sing, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a little bit more jarring. Because it's like, she doesn't do it all the time. So it's like, whoa, like Jennifer Love Hewitt can sing. You know what I mean? It's a little, it takes more time to get used to for some reason.
Yeah. It's like hearing Gwyneth Paltrow sing. It's like.
That's exactly.
You can sing. That's
the best comparison.
But why are you singing?
Yeah. Like, okay, what next?
Okay, we get it. You sing.
You can do everything. You're a bitch.
Okay, you're a theater kid. We get it.
Yeah, like, calm down. And we do get like a really great Freddie Prinze Jr. moment where he's like walking, and it's like his moment where they're like, "Well, we need like a good photo for like the team beat like fold out."
Mm-hmm.
So let's get him walking in slow motion, covered in soot and oil, to "How Do I Be With You" playing in the background by Jennifer Love Hewitt. He's like literally for no reason, slow motion, like sexy walking.
He reminds me of that episode of Next Top Model when they have to like grease up and like they're like posing on top of cars. That one. Yeah. And it's like, it's all, like wind and rain around them. Like it's very like okay. That. Like, this is weird.
Like, he is, I never realized until my adult life how much I did not like Freddie Prinze Jr. as a kid. Like, he's much better in this movie, but I get it's like by the skin of his teeth, he is a horrible actor. Horrible.
No charisma.
Like, to be the guy who saves the day twice, he's pretty like, I mean, there's just nothing going on.
Nothing going on. I mean, he's very clearly a case of like nepotism. Like,
yes.
And like, you're passable in the looks department, because honestly, as I sit here, like, I'm like sweaty and disgusting right now. I'm like, he's like a four best. I got a giant zit on my face. Like, yeah, he's ugly.
He like defined like, he, like defined so many girls like adolescents, and we're like, he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, in our defense, we were very young, so you know, any like semblance of a man, which means there's some leg hair, was exciting. Totally. Now that I'm an adult woman, I'm like, yeah, you're okay.
I love you, Julie. Like, this man
also just comes off really awful in this movie, I feel like, because out the gate when Julie clearly suffering from PTSD doesn't want to go back home to the town where all of her friends were murdered, he like really takes it personally, and I'm like, what is, like, you were there for this, why are you so insensitive right now? Like, I don't get it.
Isn't it so weird? It's like such a weird thing to write into the movie that he's annoyed that she doesn't want to celebrate the 4th of July in their hometown where everybody just died that she knows. All his friends too, by the way.
He's like, you're so un-American, Julie. I can't believe you.
I know.
You know how you know how Americans died so you can have your freedoms? And she's like, yeah, like my friends? Like, yeah. I remember. So I don't want to go back.
My friends and like my friend's sister and your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. And Johnny Galecki, who like I didn't really like that much, but you know.
Yeah. He's like, if you don't want to spend 4th of July weekend like celebrating, that means you don't want to spend it with me, Julie. And he like runs away. I was like, ugh, let him go. God, let him go. Fuck Will.
Yeah. He's a catch, this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, from the gate, very confused with Will. Cause like,
right.
First, I was like, who the fuck is this? Because she like is, he's like, oh, you're having those bad dreams again? And I was like, wait, you know about this? Like, yeah. Wait, how much do you know? And I, throughout the movie, was just like, wait, so how much does everyone know about what happened to Julie? Because it becomes a big like reveal where she like gives them the full story. And I was like, so did you guys know up until the point where she thought she murdered someone and got away with it? Because that's, you guys are really chill with that. Like,
yeah, like nobody inquired about the remainder or like the rest of the story. Like, there are several murders involved, like yeah. Several murders. I thought that was very strange. Yeah, his presence in the movie feels so weird. It's like they really did just kind of plop him in this movie where they're like, we need like a guy. And he's so obviously creepy, like from the very beginning. And as a kid, I guess maybe it worked on me. Mm-hmm. He's like a nice guy in quotes, but like he's extremely creepy and off-putting and obviously the killer from the very start.
Yeah, it's pretty ham-fisted. Like,
yeah, I was like, okay, like Will's random in this movie.
Yeah, it's his presence is not explained well enough to allow for you to not immediately know he's guilty.
Yeah,
it's like he just is there and just like is somehow like her like emotional support classmate, and like she's just right. That's just the relationship. And I'm like, but it's been a year, like how have you established this deep relationship where you've told him all about your trauma but like you haven't told like your mom, or you know, you don't talk to your boyfriend about it really, like, but this is the guy I'm gonna tell all my deep dark secrets to.
Yeah, and he's like very clearly like obsessed and in love with her, but Freddie Prinze Jr. is just kind of like fine with it, like it's just fine, like okay. He's like, yeah, they all start off wanting to be your friend, Julie. It's like, what?
Oh yeah, the way you're saying Julie too is like triggering something else in my brain, but I cannot access what other movie where someone says the girl's name just like that, and I'm gonna remember it tonight and be like, oh my god, it was this. I'll text you.
We also cannot go any further without talking about the fact that A, Jack Black is in this movie, okay? B, he used to be, this is like before Jack Black was like famous, so he used to be like the token fat, funny, gross guy.
Mm-hmm.
And C, this man has a matted dreadlock wig on. And he is like his character in this movie is, I wrote in my notes that he's all of the weed themed items at Spencer's as a character, as a person.
Oh my God.
Like yes. He is just so cartoonish and inappropriate. It is.
And kind of racist.
So racist. Like, I'm like, so is he giving you a Rasta accent, or does he just slip in and out? Like, it is Colin Hanks times 20.
No, it is truly bizarre. It reminded me of because Philip Seymour Hoffman used to be this before he became a thing, but like in Twister, where he's like, again, kind of like the larger, like goofy guy in the group, and it's like mm-hmm. It's truly bizarre seeing him in this movie, just like knowing who he becomes and being like, what are you doing here, Jack? Like, what the hell? Like,
It is insane. Like,
and apparently he's uncredited in this.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I'm on Wikipedia, and it's like Jack Black as Titus Telesco, uncredited. Like,
wow.
His people did that. They're like, he's going to be a star. We can't have, like, that showing up
anymore. Totally. Or, yeah, or, you know, like, even, like, maybe after, he was like, hey, I just got cast in School of Rock. Could you guys take me off that that movie where I wore a dread wig?
We need to fucking bury it. I'm so interested in that, like... actors burying movies that embarrass them, like that Neo Ned movie with Gabrielle Union.
Oh yeah,
that like I only just found out about, and I'm like, yeah. How did no one know about the fact that Gabrielle Union played a Black woman who is in an insane asylum because she thinks she's Hitler? Like, what? Like, my God, her people, the fixers around her really buried that one.
Oh my God. I know, I was telling my friend Hannah on whatever episode we recorded together about the Texas Chainsaw with Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger,
mm-hmm.
that they like I think they're still going through court to get their faces off the poster. Like, they're still fighting tooth and nail to be disassociated with that movie when everybody knows it as the movie with Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger.
No, it's like when you see covers of Leprechaun, like Jen Aniston is still like
on
the cover of it with her old nose, and it's like, wow, this is shady. Like, take her off.
It's just a giant picture of her face covered in green screen.
We talk so much about, like, you know, Angelina Jolie and Jen. Like, you can talk more about the people behind Leprechaun and what they did to Jennifer Aniston. That's far worse than taking your husband. Like, this is bad.
Oh, my God. I know. Yeah, this is, like, for sure Jack Black wanted this off his... He didn't want anything to do with this, and rightfully. I mean, this is, like... It is so cringy. Like... And by the way, when I was little, because this movie came out when I was, like, 9 or 10, I used to think that this is what... I was like, oh, a classic pothead. Like, this to me at this time was like what it looked like to be like a drug addict.
Yeah, like if you like when you take your first hit of weed, you just get like a Jamaican accent immediately.
And you hold it in the back of your mouth and finish all your sentences like this. Like, okay, like he's like, it's all gonna be okay, brother. Smoke the ganja. I'm like, it's so over the top and insane. And it's like, his presence in this movie is so random. Like, he literally pops up out of nowhere. Sometimes they'll be sitting by the pool and his body will just pop up out of the pool with like a bunch of blunts in his mouth that are wet that he's lighting. It's just insane.
He literally just materializes like out of nowhere.
Yeah, he does. And then he materializes weed in his mouth and is just like billowing smoke all the time.
I mean, of course, and when he gets killed, there is like the over the top. Like he gets, how does it go? He gets like stabbed first in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the killer is like looking for his weapon because there's like, for some reason, there's like all of these tools to kill him with. He's like, what do I want today?
Right.
He's like looking for, and the whole time, I'm pretty sure Jack Black is like ad libbing, just like, no way, man. No, don't do that. Not that one.
Yeah.
Sounds so stupid.
I love too when he opens up his like grow area and he's like, these my babies. Look at my little babies. Hi, my babies. Ooh, my babies. It's like, wow, do you like weed by chance?
I mean, it's probably the most accurate part of people like who grow weed. Honestly, we just plant people in general. Like, no, that's true.
Yes, my little babies.
I play Beethoven for them, so they grow.
<It's> so silly. I also love, like, I don't know if I love this, but I just think that this movie has so many weird, like, there's so many interesting conversations involving race around this movie to the point that they literally have like a magical Negro, like a classic Wikipedia term, magical Negro in this movie.
Oh my God, just, yes.
For whatever reason, knows voodoo, he knows potions, he's a clairvoyant, he knows the future, he's wise beyond his years, and for whatever reason, he just pops up and knows everything and magic. It's like, okay.
And up until this point, it's never been implied in the series that there's any supernatural elements in it. But like this guy, you're right, like literal magical Negro who like out the gate, they're terrified of because they're like, we found his voodoo. Mm-hmm. He must be the killer. I'm like, this man is 80. No, he's not the killer. Like, he is so old.
I know. He's like, follow me if you want to know the future. Like, he's like, he turns into like Otev or something. Like, it is insane that this old man is just in the basement of this resort doing all kinds of potions and like witch brews. Like, okay.
But the one thing, the one part of this movie I've been quoting all week for no reason, no context, is when Julie and Carla realize like, oh shit, like we've been had, like the whole, the question about Brazil was wrong and that's how we were brought here. And he just appears and he's like, Brasilia. It's so silly to me. It's like, he has all the shadows and says, Brasilia. It's like, what?
Oh my God. And I love too when they're like, when they're still playing with you, that's like you really don't know who's good or bad. And mm-hmm. he's with what's that random guy's name?
Oh, Will.
Will. And he's like, where do we go now? What do we do? And he's like, you're not going anywhere. Like, he's so this guy's like in a different movie. You know what I mean? In his head.
Yeah, he's like the discount Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. He's like, finally, my Sidney Poitier moment. You're not going. And to add on to that, there's also some really just interesting cliches. Like, I don't know, when you think about Black people in horror movies, it's like, obviously, you think about the fact that we always die very quickly. And like, mm-hmm. in a really just ridiculous way. Like I said last week, holding a Mountain Dew or something.
Yeah, and saying like, oh shit, and then we die.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no. Beheaded.
Very famously, the only Black character in Scream 3 dies and says, oh, you motherfucker. And like, you know, there's always like that cliche. But then
yes.
There's also all these cliches and tropes, like, in that people really talk about, like not only in horror, but just I feel like in these early 2000s, like late 90s, you know, stacked teen movies specifically. And I think when you look at Tyrell and mm-hmm. Carla, aka Mekhi Phifer and Brandy, they have all the things. Like,
yes,
Tyrell is this like brute, mean asshole, and he's short tempered,
and for no apparent reason. Either
literally no reason, he's just verbally assaulting people the whole
but the writer's like, he's Black guy, you know.
Yeah, he's got to be a little aggressive.
Yeah, he's a little street.
He's horny. All he wants to do is fuck no matter what. There could be bodies dangling next to him and he still is going to be trying to fuck Brandy. He's a chauvinist and he's just like a, you know, like a macho douchebag. Nothing else to his personality.
Absolutely nothing else. And of course his counterpart, like Carla, is just the sassy friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like even like in the beginning, like sassy, well, additionally Black characters have no motivations or feelings apparently, because like in the very beginning Julie almost kills Carla. Like she's freaked out in the apartment. Carla comes home at night because she's getting ready to go to the nightclub for her job. And Julie runs at her with like a knife. They both scream. And then Carla's fine with it. Like, there's no like, bitch, you almost killed me. It's just like, oh girl, you need to come out with me to the nightclub. You need to get some dick. It's like you almost died, Carla. It's like, honey. And she would not have been like prosecuted for it. Like you would have just died. And that would have been like it. Like, Carla.
And how funny is that moment?
Do better.
She's like Carla, for whatever reason, for like 4 minutes is walking very quickly in the shadows of the house. And then it's discovered like, oh, it's just Carla looking for a crop top in the closet. Like, okay, why was she walking in the darkness and not like responding to anything?
It's like, girl, put the light on. What are you doing?
Turn on the lights, sis. But no, yeah, she's like, you know, just very classic, like sassy Black girl. She tells it like it is. And she also like dresses funky, of course. Like,
yes.
She's a really funky, like over the top sort of sexy style. She's always showing her body. And she's also like, it's like, she's there to be like pawed at by her boyfriend the whole time. Like all he wants to do is fuck her the whole movie. You know what I mean? And it's just like such classic, like, and of course it's like, these characters have to date because they're the two Black people. So they're going to, there's no question of whether or not they'll be dating. You know that they are when you see them, and it just is what it is. It's just so silly.
It's very silly. And then even like the way she relates to Julie is like, it's, so I have friends of very different races, assortment of races. Mm-hmm. Sounds like I'm like collecting people. I have all the colors, but like I have a lot of different friends that are pretty diverse. And yes, race comes up, you know, in the relationship, it happens if you're close enough. But another thing that happens a lot with these late 90s, early 2000s movies is that like, it's always like, there always has to be like a weird race joke at some point that I'm like, I don't know how often you make that. Like, so they're at the nightclub and Carl's like, come on, get your girl, get your white butt out here and dance. And she's like, Julie's like, have you seen my people dance? Like, I'm white, you're Black. Like, it's very like, we get it. Like, like, why is this being talked about so much? Or like the tanning, like, oh girl, get your skinny white butt in that tanning bed. You gotta have some color in your ass. Like, why?
You pale bitch. It's like, okay.
You pale stupid bitch. Like, like, I don't get it. Like, I don't, no one talks like this. And also, like, don't encourage your friends to tan. That's not good for them.
I know. I'm literally crying. No, but it's
the
like
the real killer in this movie was that tanning bed.
I mean, can we talk? Like, I've never stepped foot in a tanning bed in my life, obviously, but I've never been more scared of one.
Yeah.
But no, it's so true. Like, all of the shit, like, when that moment where she, like, snaps her fingers and she's like, have you seen our people dance? We snap our fingers. Like, I can't. Like, it's so embarrassing because I'm white. It's like, oh, my God. And then, of course, like, Brandy is, like, body rolling and snapping and, like, it's just like, God, like, it's like the same person comes in and he's like the guy that writes for the Black characters in every movie at this time. Like,
yeah, and he's also white.
Right. So funny. Also, speaking of Brandy's funky fashion, like, I was realizing when I was watching this that, you know, 1998 is a weird time for fashion, and it's hard to look at something and say, oh, it's so 1998, because it's like a transition year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the clothes are leaving the 90s, so they're not really like typical 90s clothes, but they're not Y2K clothes yet.
Right.
It's like this weird in-between time. Like, the style in this movie is insane. I mean, it is absolutely fucking insane. There's a moment where Jennifer Love Hewitt is supposed, when they're at the club, like, her club hair is one of the craziest things I've seen on film to date. Like, it was fucking insane.
A lot of weird choices. And I think on top of the fashion thing we don't talk about are the hair choices of this era. Because now I'm looking back, like, oh, I feel like I saw a lot of magazines, a lot of crimped hair, a lot of weird clips. Just like, I don't know. I think every generation thinks their fashion is the best.
Right.
But I have a hard time thinking anyone's going to look back at 2020 and be like, that was weird.
I agree with that. I feel like people, I was thinking about that a lot too, like, because so much of what you see, I was thinking about the fact that like kids watch movies like this, mm-hmm. and they try and interpret it. Like, they love it. Like, kids love early 2000s shit, right?
Oh yeah, they're like really into it right now.
They're obsessed with it. They love the aesthetic. They love the idea of people like having flip phones. Like, it's all just such like a magical thing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's funny. Like, I was looking at like Brandy's club outfit, for example. She was wearing these like, these red, I don't even know what, they were like corduroy pants that laced up on the crotch, and like a half like floral shirt that like tied. And I was like, I can totally see some girl looking at that and being like, chic as fuck. I'm going to copy this outfit from head to toe. Because to me, it's not cringe. But like, we're too close to it for it not to be cringe.
Yeah, that's true. Because a lot of this stuff is making a comeback. And it's like, I'm just also dreading the day when like low-rise jeans come back.
So, oh my God.
Like, when I was a little kid, I liked them. But I also didn't expect my body to look like this when they came back. I was hoping to fix my ass. I'm like, please don't do it. Like, I need a mom jean, okay? Come on.
I've made many comments on this podcast before about like just really feeling so sorry for a lot of my friends having to struggle through low-rise jeans just like in everyday life. Insane. Not being able to bend over or pick anything up or sit down or anything.
You're gonna do like a full Manny Santos, like with like your whale tail, or you're just like, I'm not wearing panties, baby. And I'm like, whoa, she's 14. That's weird. Yeah.
Like my butt cracks out, boys. Like, cool. Such a weird thing, but no, like the style is very, very, very intense in this movie. And on top of it, it's like you also have to factor in that these movies, like I look at them and I think of them as they're like pushing everything cool in our faces at the time, like of the cool music, all of the hair, like they're trying really hard to like sell everything. Everything is a billboard.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is marketing. Everything is to like sell a product. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, wow, this is what we were wearing. Like, okay, Jennifer Love Hewitt's club hair. Let me just try and explain it. It kind of reminds me of Romy from Romy and Michelle's hair in certain scenes. Like, it's like, okay, the only way that I could describe it is that somebody took gel and they rubbed gel in their hands and got it in between their fingers real good. And then they ran their hands into her scalp and stopped. And they pulled up and then released. And her hair is just sticking up off her scalp with gel. And then it's just down. Like, it just goes up into the air. And then it's just flat. It's so impossible to even try and describe.
Yeah, so I pulled up a picture just to like refresh my memory, and there's like two little tendrils.
Yes,
like just kind of, but they're also kind of like up and out.
They're up and out. How it is odd. Up and out. It's gelled up in the air and then it's flat.
Why would they do that?
It's so weird.
That is so odd. Like,
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like, so they put like mousse or something and just like they gave up. Like, maybe they like needed to get like, we need Jen on set like immediately, so the hairstyle was like and just kind of like just go, just gets her out there, and now we have it.
She's like, just run this through your hair, go.
Oh my god. Well, there's even like the bit later, so when they're in the Bahamas and like, oh, like, let's go down to the bar, and like, there's nobody there. That right. One bartender, even like the looks then, like, okay, we're gonna get dressed up and go down. And it's like, she's wearing like, okay, she has her hair up. There's definitely like a claw or something in the back of her head that's holding her hair up. Of course, she's got her tendrils, because you gotta have your little tennies. It's 98, baby.
Of course.
She's wearing like a light blue, it's a weird printed dress.
It's like an Easter dress.
Yes, that's what it is. It's a pastel, like kind of like Easter in the ninth grade, maybe. Or like, oh, ninth grade, like freshman year, it's 98, first dance.
I mean, you couldn't have said it better. It's very, like, you went to whatever department store, Dillard's or whatever, and
like, it's definitely like a Delia's dress.
Yes, it's very Delia's, like maybe Wet Seal if you were like that girl, you know.
Yeah, and she's got it, and but like, she's a college aged gal, so it's very like juvenile.
Yes,
looking for her age.
I feel like that was like a very like that juvenile sort of baby doll look was very much like a thing, like those little like dresses and like cardigans that are an exact match, like sets, you know, and also weird little heels, like very odd heels. Like, there's a moment, I think in that scene, it's not a wedge and it's not a heel. It's like a clog that's wooden.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, probably has some like Asian inspired, like dragon or something on it, like something really stupid. And it's like a cork wood moment. Like, they all make weird noises, their heels.
Yes. And but it's interesting though, because you juxtapose it with Brandy in that same scene. She's got like that floral like tie shirt up. So it's like, you have like Julie's all like innocent looking and like sweet. And then like you have like her sexy black friend with her head. She has a headband too, which is also odd.
Yes.
Like a headband at night? Why?
Yeah. Like she's like fully dressed for Sunday service.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know, now I'm like really looking at some of these outfits. But then you have this, see, they're telling a story with fashion. Because this is before everything turns to shit. This is before she's singing karaoke and she realizes like she's being stalked, right? Because, you know, she has her little innocent Easter dress. But then later on, when the killer is on the loose, she's got like that white blouse and it's like buttoned all the way down and she's wet and like her boobs are out. And it's like, oh, like she's lost her innocence, y'all. Like she's, you know.
Yeah. I always love that. I love that. Yes, because it's her final girl look. Like, I think we talked about this. I love like sort of figuring out what the final girl look is going to be. You can always tell. There's a moment in every horror movie where they have to either change or they like rip, you know, like the bottom off their dress or something. Like, you know, it's like, this is going to be my final girl look. And it's something that's like sexy, but also something they can like be active in and do stunts.
Yeah.
So it's like, she decides that her, like in the middle of all these people dying, and like, she decides to go put on like a look. So she runs up to the room and puts on like a skin tight white blouse, only two buttons done.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Her whole entire chest is out, which is like, she looks so good. And she's wearing this, like, she like put on like a lace black bra underneath. And she's wearing it with like athleisure pants so that she can like run around. It's amazing.
It is so amazing. And you know, as someone who like loves horror movies so much, I never really thought about the final girl look, but now I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Like your shirt's a little slashed. Maybe the killer got you a little bit. So you're like a little, like your shirt's a little ripped up, but like but not too ripped. It's kind of like chic.
Right. Exactly. It's just enough to look like an aesthetic, like a survivor aesthetic.
Oh my God. And your hair has to be wet.
You have to be wet. I mean,
which is why they can never let us have a black final girl. Cause I'm like, okay, right? In what universe are you getting my hair wet for this movie? How much you paying me? Not that much.
And they also love to put Jennifer Love Hewitt in a tank top for obvious reasons. They,
oh yeah.
In every other moment, I mean, in between each scene, she is walking in slow motion towards the camera in a tank top, and she somehow manages to get her boobs to bounce walking slow. It's really amazing.
It really is a skill that... Yeah, that's like my newfound quarantine hobby is just like the Jennifer Love Hewitt like boob walk.
Yeah, because you can very much tell that this is pre-butts, right?
Oh yeah.
This is like before Jennifer Lopez like introduced butts to white people. So nobody cares about butts yet. And like Jennifer Love Hewitt has a great butt. Have you ever seen Heartbreakers?
I have.
So I always make the argument that I think Jennifer Love Hewitt literally invented the Kylie body.
Ooh.
In that movie, her body is like Kylie's times 20, but all real. She's a great big giant shelf ass. But in this movie, they don't care at all. She is wearing thick, big, high-waisted, mom pleated like yoga pants that are wide. And they are like, I mean, they look like true sleep pants, like for real. She's running around in like some Aeropostale fleece sleeping pants.
But you're so right, because now I'm thinking back when I was watching the movie, of course, noticing Brandy's wagon. I think I also noticed Jenner. I was like, whoa, damn. Like, okay, she's got a butt too. But you don't, like, you see it quickly. It's not like a male gazey moment. That's reserved for when she gets in the tanning booth and they, like, do the full body, like, up and down, like, yes, you know, in her bikini. But, yeah, they don't focus on her butt at all, but it's there.
Yeah, there's no, like, real zoom in moments on her butt or whatever. Which is, like, you know, they zoom in on her boobs pretty much the whole time. So it's like, well, I guess they just didn't care.
Weird. Oh my god, this is fascinating. And I found a still, of course, of her in the cemetery doing the "What are you waiting for?" with like her boobs out and her top. Right.
Can we also talk about the fact that this is, in fact, it's a holiday horror movie, but nobody ever really talks about it being it's not known as a holiday horror movie, but this is a 4th of July horror movie.
It is. Both of them are.
Yeah. And you never hear people mention that this falls into the category of being technically a holiday horror film.
But you see, I feel like if you're doing a horror movie that takes place in the summer, it just becomes like a summer movie. Like, I think of it just as a summer movie. Because, like,
right,
it's not, I don't know how to explain it, but, like, even horror movies that come out around Halloween, I don't see them as Halloween movies. They're just like a horror movie that came out at an opportune time. Like, I don't think of very many movies that are like specifically Halloween movies. I think it's like because they're two time periods or times of year where I expect there to be a horror movie, almost like a summer, like, well, oh yeah, they're at camp, they're like on vacation, they're getting murdered, or like, oh, it's like Halloween, like, oh, something's happening. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it's hard to pull that off, you know? Yeah.
It has to be, because it's just funny. It's like there are certain movies that I look at and I think, like, yeah, that is a very obvious, like, that's a holiday horror film. But this one, even though they talk about the 4th of July the whole time, you don't ever really, I don't know, nobody ever says, like, let's watch I Know What You Did Last Summer for the 4th.
let's start it. I'm gonna start doing that every 4th. Like, usually the 4th, I watch The Patriot. I know, problematic, but I watch The Patriot just because, you know, I need a little dose of bullshit patriotism. But maybe from now on, we just watch I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah, like, it is sort of the, I don't know any other 4th of July. By the way, I just sent you a GIF of Jennifer Love Hewitt's Kylie body.
Via email or?
No, I texted it to you. It's like, oh, okay. If you cut the head off, it's Kylie walking into a restaurant.
Oh my God.
Can we talk?
Oh, damn. Okay. Wear a little pink dress. Go ahead, right? Girl.
Like, Jennifer Love Hewitt had, she was like the body, and we didn't talk about it
enough. We didn't talk about it, like, or not enough, or we don't talk about it enough when we think of like girls of that era. Like, yeah, I'm like, shoot.
She's hot. Like, she is everything. Made me think I was straight, maybe, in 1998. I don't know. what else did I write in my notes that I found interesting about this movie? Oh, well, we have to talk about the plot.
Oh, yes.
Hello? Like, maybe we should talk about the movie.
Forgettable.
Listen, here's what I say. This is what I wrote on my notes as I was trying to be positive. I said the sequel is consistent with the original and the fact that the plot is insane and overwritten and makes no sense. Plot holes galore, starting with the fact that it revolves around a fake radio contest that felt so over the top and such an insane thing to orchestrate. I mean, what?
So I don't remember when they, when the radio station calls them, which is also like, since when does the radio call you? Like, usually you call into the radio. Okay, sure, Jan. When the guy calls them, are they on? Like, are they also listening to the radio when they're on the phone, or are they just on the phone? I don't remember.
So the radio station calls their house phone, and then Brandy tells Julie to turn the radio on so that they can hear it.
Okay, so it's as stupid as I thought, because now I'm like, I was thinking, before, like, well, maybe I'm just overthinking it. Okay, no, they definitely put the radio on. So I'm like, so wait. So this is an actual radio station. So that they seem to know, because they're like, we love WPGC, whatever, the thing, the sign off. So I'm like, so did Will, or is it a belief that he like, does he work at the station? Or better yet, which I like this idea more, he spent the past year since his father was almost killed, right, like really building a brand and really like from the ground up building the station up so that they could eventually, the college students love it. Like it's like the local college like station, so they can get to this point where he can eventually call them just to send them on this bullshit trip.
Just to send them on a trip where he can kill them. Where it is like, what? Who was smoking what? Who was smoking what? Because it is like, what?
It's truly asinine. Like, the more obvious thing would just be like, they're college students and it's summer. They just go on a trip. And maybe Will is the one who like is like, hey, you know, my family's got this house, or we used to go to this place, we loved it. Like, and then they go there, like, as opposed to like, hey, we know they're gonna call this radio station, they're gonna ask them this geography question that we're gonna broadcast, and someone's gonna hear that question and be like, they didn't get that right.
I mean, can we talk about that?
Like, it's Brasilia.
like nobody at one point ever in the movie up until the very, very last second, like, and lets them know that the answer was wrong. I mean, nobody, no, nothing. Everybody listening to the radio was just okay with them getting the answer wrong and winning a trip to paradise.
And like, here, realistically, I think Brazil is one of those countries that when, if you ask someone the capital, they will say Rio. And I can't blame them, because I'm like, yeah. Like, it's like Australia, where like, everyone says Sydney, but it's like Canberra. And I'm like, where the fuck is that? Who goes there? But like, right. It exists. Like, I get it. But it is odd that like, no one at any point, or they didn't tell anyone else, like, oh my God, we got this like trip. They asked us what the capital of Brazil. And they're like, and we said Rio. And the person's like, it's Brasilia. Like, Brasilia. Yeah. Like, you know, like, no, yes. No one ever said this. Like, but you know, it's America, the American school system. So why everybody thought the wrong answer?
I mean, especially, look, especially if you go in your pantry and pull out your Brazilian coffee and the only word on the coffee ground is Brazil. So of course, that's what you are bound to think. I love that that's how she got the answer. She was like, wait, I have coffee from another country. Hold on a second. And then she opens the cabinet and it just so happens to be some like Brazilian coffee bean. Like, what?
And also the assumption that wherever the coffee bean comes from must be the capital. Like, I don't think it works that way, honey. Like, no.
Oh my God. Insanity.
Like, I like to think like someone is like, I don't know, somewhere in like another country, let's say they're in Poland, similar scenario, like name the capital of the United States. And they just go rummaging in their pantry and they find like some cheese and they're like, Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin. Like,
yeah, it has to be. It says it on the cheese.
It's where cheese is from.
Okay. Cheese is from America. Wisconsin. Okay. Like,
you're right. You're going to the Bahamas.
That's all it takes. Gear up, kids. All expenses paid. You leave tomorrow. It's like, okay.
It's so dumb.
So then we get like we get, I guess, the reintroduction of this guy who, by the way, we still don't, this killer that we still, not even his son, but like the older guy, we don't know anything about. Like,
nope.
We don't know why he's supposed to be scary. He's just some crazy, and he's very Southern. Hi, Julie. I'm back, Julie. Like,
he went like full Cajun. Like,
he like left Bon Ton from True Blood to kill Julie. And
he sounds like, what's his name? Like Renee? It was like the first season killer, the serial killer. He sounds just like him.
All right, baby. Come on, Julie.
Like,
I'm back, Julie. Make sure when you kill somebody, they're dead.
And he's always like smiling at her with a really big smile. Like, I don't understand him at all. I don't know. I don't get him.
I mean, it's like you said, it's why this killer is not memorable and does not stand the test of time. Because it is so like, what is his deal? And also just kind of silly, the fisherman, like one point when they're at the nightclub and Julie's like, you know, the other strobe lights go in. So that's traumatizing, but she like looks up and she's like a fisherman just standing on the balcony. And it just looks very silly. Like,
I know, it's like, why did he bring, what is the need for his slicker?
You know, it's his look, it's his fit. Julie has her final girl outfit. This is his outfit.
I love that he brought his slicker to the Bahamas.
Yeah, he knew, like, it's hurricane season. He's like, yeah, get wet.
I'm gonna get rained on. And I will say, one of the most, to me, like, none of that stuff matters. Like, I don't care at all about the killer, which is insane. I don't care about the plot. The thing in this movie that really frustrates me is I hate this trope, and I always hate it in every movie. I hate that she's supposed to look crazy the whole time, and they just run it into the ground of them being like, Julie, gosh, Julie, you're at it again. Like, she did just have, like, 9 people die in her life. Like, all her friends died. She was almost murdered. Mm-hmm. And they're acting like she's, like, this lunatic because she's, like, having anxiety.
Exactly, which is why the scene down on the dock was so frustrating, because, and why it was confusing, because I was like, well, how much do they know about what happened to her? Because they are acting in a way that implies that they, like, oh, she's fine, like, nothing's like, girl, what are you, like, you're tripping. And it's like, mm-hmm. No, but you, so you know all the things.
Yeah.
Apparently, except for, like, the additional murders, maybe.
Right.
But you're really annoyed that she's, like, a huge bummer on this vacation.
Yeah. Mekhi Phifer is like, so you killed a guy, and then you forgot to tell us that you didn't really kill the guy? Thanks, Julie. Now he's after us. Now we have to go defend ourselves. It's like, what is happening?
Well, she also didn't remember it because the plot is so confusing. I didn't remember it. Like, yeah. I forgot too. Damn. Like,
and
Mekhi relaxed.
I mean, she saw his hand get cut off, and they thought, well.
Yeah, they plopped him in the middle of the ocean.
And Brandy's like, how could you not tell us every detail, Julie? Let's go find some weapons.
Which, like, I don't know. I'm thinking, I guess if I were on, like, a resort, what would I get? I guess I'll go to the kitchen and just get some shit. But, like, where would I realistically go to, like, get some weapons? Like, right? Where would I go now? I'm right here where I live to go get a weapon. Like, from where? Like,
well, they do go to the kitchen, remember? Mekhi Phifer is like, shut the fuck up. Y'all hungry too. Look for some food. Shut the fuck up and eat. They're like, okay. Like,
he goes full, like, Ike Turner. He finds cake and, like, force feeds it to everyone. It's like, why are you so obsessed to eat? Like, how are you hungry? Like, aren't you terrified? What's happening?
Right. The killer is currently trying to find you guys in this room. So
he's like, I'm gonna make a Sammy.
I also honestly can't believe that they fully recreated the what are you waiting for scene. Like, they just recreated it.
It was shocking.
Isn't that crazy?
It was shocking. I was like, do you guys really just do it again? Like, especially because that's, like, the most, like, I'm wondering, were they thinking that, like, you know, people, like, make fun of that scene, right? Were they just trying to, like, let's just do it again to give them, like, a good laugh? Or was it, like, right, a, oh, man, like, Jen was just so good, you know, the way she did that scene, it was so believable. Also, she's really good at shaking those titties. Let's get her in there again. I cackled when it happened.
Because then all of a sudden, even though they're out in the rain, her voice becomes, like she's in a coliseum. Like, it sounds like she's a gladiator. And she's like, this is it! This is the final time! She's like, what are you waiting for, huh? This is it! On my grave! On my way! Like, having a full monologue out in the rain, and they're all just staring at her.
It also reminds me that Anna Faris, like, nailed it in the scary movie, like, movies, doing it. Like, she's so, like, it, she captured the awkwardness of the screaming, the spinning, and then just, like, spinning. Like, it's so silly. Like, who, God, I don't know.
Who's like, tonight we battle!
Like, this is, like, good.
What are you talking about? And she is like, at that point, it's just, what did they call it in the 90s? Jiggle TV?
Oh, yeah.
It's just, she's soaking wet. Her shirt is unbuttoned way down to her belly button. She's randomly in J-Lo's green Grammy dress. and she is just jiggling and bouncing and like just Peggy Bundying the house down.
I wonder how many takes she had to do for that scene.
Oh my God.
Probably so many.
Probably, I'm sure the director was like, we still didn't get it. Take 64, roll it, boys.
But there's like no tape in it. It's just like, right. Just watching her. No one's filming it anymore.
It's just them all using personal camcorders to film it themselves. They're like, take 72. And I just also love that, like, this guy, like, the guy, Billy Blue's son, or whatever.
Whose name is clearly, like, his name is Ben Willis, and the kid's name is Will Benson. It's, like, very obviously the son. He's, like, Ben's son, get it?
Like, yeah, he's what? Like, don't you see, Julie? Don't you see Will Ben's son? Ben's son? It's, like, what is this, Clue? What movie is this?
He was giving us a full like Harry Potter, like what's his fucking name? Tom Marvolo Wordle. He does like the magic, and it's like, I am Lord Voldemort. It's like, oh man, dang it!
Don't you see now, Julie? She's like, no, I need you to fully explain everything a couple times, Polly.
I need you to like write it out, like give me your full family tree. I don't get it.
Yeah, she's like, oh, Benson. So you, okay, Ben's son. Like, I wasn't really thinking that. Okay. Don't you see? And then I love when she, like, finally does kill him, when she kills the guy. And it's
okay,
like,
okay, I'm sorry. I remember the way you're saying Julie, it came to me. I knew what was gonna happen. Have you seen The Next Karate Kid?
Yes.
Hilarious, oh like, God. Is Julie the fucking guy from that movie? God. The weird, like, fascist, like, military kid from the school.
Yes.
He's always like, hey, Julie. 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 Sorry. I'm so sorry. Continue.
No. Sorry, I just had to gag and pause our microphone because I'm, like, laughing too hard. It's very that. I love that movie.
He's so good.
But when she, like, cartoonishly, it's like the end of this movie is literally Animaniacs. It is a full-blown, hand-drawn cartoon. She, like, when she shoots him, she's like, just fucking die already. And he's, like, for some reason, superhuman. He's been shot 80 times, and he's like, ooh, 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 ooh,
ooh, ooh. She's also shooting him with, like, a six shooter, and she shoots him 8 times.
Right.
And we know it was already missing a bullet, so she's just like, I don't know how it's possible, but so many bullets.
It's like a handgun machine gun. It's just like and then he like cartoonishly falls into a muddy grave. His face is still very blatantly moving because he's being rained on, so the actor can't pretend that it's not affecting him. He's like winking and scrunching up his
like
nose.
He's like kind of drowning a little bit.
He's like just above the mud. and it just is the most cartoonish ending to this movie ever. I mean, it couldn't be more. It's like Looney Tunes.
But also you think they would learn. This man has trouble dying. So you need to get something to like, you need to dismember this man. Like,
yes, cut off his head.
Like, is resilient. He's bulletproof.
And I just love that she shoots him perfectly into her grave. His grave that he came out to the Bahamas to write Julie 1998 in red spray paint.
Yeah, he falls in like Billy in Hocus Pocus. Yeah. He just like yawns and just falls.
Julie lies here. and then of course like the funny thing about these movies is that each time they end with her, it's like they end with her and everybody being completely fine. Mm-hmm. Like whenever the killer's dead, like it cuts to a scene that's like sepia toned, it's beautifully lit, of her like skipping and being like I'm getting the mail. My life's so good.
We bought a house.
Yeah.
We have a mortgage.
She like keeps looking at Freddie Prinze Jr. while he brushes his teeth, and he's like, she's so charmed by him.
Yeah, he's got some nice teeth.
And I guess I should mention that Freddie Prinze Jr. does, again, Zorro his way. I mean, and this one is like more so of like a Kill Bill thing, because he's going through, I mean, he has chartered a boat, he's sold the ring, he found a gun, he's all over the country gathering the tools that he needs to get to Julie on in the Bahamas, and then he shows up and does not shit. He shows up after all that. He doesn't know how to shoot the gun.
Nope.
He gets the shit beaten out of him. And that's it.
Yep.
He didn't do anything to help at all. I mean, I guess he brought a gun.
Well, he was there.
He was there. He was there to hold her at the end.
But he promised to be there. So he was there. That's what matters. Like, she should have chewed him out after he shows up and after she killed everyone, just be like, but like, my guy, you did nothing.
Like, why
was the point
showing up to just get beaten up? Like, now I'm saving you. Like, I have to save you.
Disappoint me. And just guess what? And they still end up together. It's like that stupid how it started, like what it is now meme that's happening right now. And it's like,
right,
yeah, how it started, and it's like him showing up late to the fucking climax, and then they're just brushing their teeth together later, and they're happy. Like,
yeah, they're just homeowners. Pathetic. They're homeowners, and she's in another a nice clean tank with no bra. And he's enamored by his electric toothbrush, which I guess in 98 was like a revelation.
I guess that was new.
I guess yeah, it would have been.
My teeth have never been so clean.
He's like, I love this thing. Ugh. Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else that I love about this movie or that I feel like I need to get off my chest before we bury it in a grave March, Julie, 1998.
I mean, of course, it pulls the same thing it did in the first, which is,
oh yeah,
like killer still is. Which in my head, I'm like, she just has PTSD and she just keeps having these dreams over and over again.
That's what it is, right?
Yeah, I figured. I was like, he's definitely dead. Like, come on now, like, because I mean, they do that with the first one, and then they retcon it at the beginning of this to be like, oh, you're having those dreams again, like. Was it just like the one in the shower? And it's like, oh, okay. So like, we have to explain away how the killer, it keeps popping up. But that's what I figured, is that she's just having these terrible dreams still. So
yeah, so that's what it feels like. It feels like she's dreaming. And I think that they also just like to come up with any excuse to get her to scream again.
Yeah.
Cause she's such a great scream. So they're like, we got to get one last good Jennifer Love Hewitt just wailing right into the camera.
I just love it. It was just like she checks the mail, sees her like first mortgage payment, and then screams and it ends. Like, that's it. It's like she just is an adult and then she screams.
Oh my God. Literally, she gets like a letter from the contractor and we'll never know what it says. I mean, that all being said, as much as we just ripped this movie's asshole apart, I love it. I will watch it again.
Oh yeah.
At some point, probably the 4th of July. And, you know, I applaud Brandy for being in a horror film. I wish more people talked about it. I don't know. I love this movie. Have you ever seen the third one?
No, I have. That one, I don't forget it. I definitely have not seen that movie.
I've heard many, many people say that it's the worst horror movie that they've ever tried to sit through. Like, genuinely.
Ooh. Well, now yeah. I have to see it then, because that's saying a lot. Yeah.
I think it was like a straight to Hollywood Video moment.
Oh, I love that.
Well, yeah, I guess, do you have anything else that you want to add about this iconic canon film?
Listen, if you got through this entire episode and you like, but you haven't somehow seen the movie, like, go see it. Like, it actually is, mm-hmm. It's on Showtime right now. It was so fun. And I think it's great for like, similar to the first one, if you're not a huge horror fan, I think this one's like perfect. It's just a fun time.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is a really good horror movie for somebody that isn't really into that whole thing, because it's mostly like a teen drama, but this just so happens to have like some horror elements to it. And yeah, it's just fun. It's just like 90s fun. It's really, really, really fun to watch. And once it picks up, like once the things start happening, it's just moment after moment of like some cliche fun horror moment.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, tell people where they can find you and your podcast and all the things.
I'll plug my Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I do comedian things sometimes. No, I'm going to claim it. I'm a comedian and I'm on Twitter.
Yeah.
My handle is SEY_anything. I also have two podcasts. One is We Die First. It's a horror podcast, which we will have Troy on very soon. I'm going to talk to you about when you're coming on because you have to come on.
Yay.
Yes. We Die First, find it wherever you listen to podcasts. And of course, along with the Solve Listen Network, Everybody Wants Something. It's a Degrassi podcast. We're about to close out junior high. So check it out.
Oh my God, you guys are about, I can't believe that you are about to close out of junior high. Like, I can't even believe that you, that's like such a wild accomplishment.
It's insane.
That's but crazy. I'm like, crazy.
It's so crazy, but I'm so excited because high is going to be so, so fun.
Oh my God. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me. At any moment, if you want to come back and talk about a horror movie through October, you are more than welcome to.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for having me. So much fun.
Of course. I will talk to you later. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Dunzo. This podcast is a part of the Solid Listen Network. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/solidlisten for exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McGee, and you can follow the podcast on all forms of social media at Dunzo Pod. That's D-U-N-Z-O. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.